Now it's time to change direction, as we do every hour, and it's time to talk to our private investigator, Peter. Now, Peter's from Absolute Facts, and we appreciate all the time Peter gives us. First of all, welcome, Peter.
Thanks. Happy winter to you, Alan.
Oh, I hate winter, but anyway, that's another story. Peter, we asked you to go away and talk about scams. Now, I went out, I can see now, I went out on a bit of a limb, and you were going to look at the age and demographics. I said to you, I thought the romance scams were going to be in the older age group. Luckily, you didn't write this down. I did, so I can alter it if I want to. And investments, I said middle age. So over to you, mate.
Yeah, so the typical victim of a romance scam, Alan, is generally aged between 45 and 65 years.
Would you call that in the older age group? I'm not game enough to say that.
45's young. So the demographic is quite broad. While middle-aged and older adults are the most frequent targets, yep, younger demographics are now increasingly being targeted as well.
Are they?
So the key demographic and victim trends. So for the age bracket of 40 to 66, who are most susceptible, authorities frequently see the highest financial losses among those aged 65 and over.
Blimey.
And in respect to gender, which I know you're always interested in, yep, reporting rates often lead toward men. Women tend to report significantly higher average financial losses per scam.
Do they?
Obviously, unfortunately, fewer women get scammed, but when they do, they fall heavily financially for the scam, I guess.
See, Peter, I would have thought, in the romance, the reason I went for older, I would have thought that the guys, if they were scammed by a young woman, because that's what they portray themselves as, that they wouldn't want to admit that they were silly enough to think some young chick was interested in them, whereas I thought the women might have been a bit more, you know, wanting to report it.
Is that all those Russian ladies you were telling me about off air,
don't
Alan?
Go there. Oh, Peter, you're a shocker.
So basically what they're saying is the romance scams in particular primarily prey on individuals seeking companionship or connection, as you've just alluded to, yep, often people who are widowed or divorced. Victims are frequently described as trusting, empathetic, and sometimes socially isolated. And because of the deep embarrassment and emotional manipulation involved, romance fraud is heavily underreported across all age groups.
Is it?
Yeah.
Peter, I would have thought, no, I shouldn't have said I thought. I think one of the problems, and I know I've got a couple of friends that I know of who've done the same, women often change their Facebook page to widow, particularly if they're a bit older. It sort of makes me think that maybe some of these scammers just go through Facebook looking for widows. Would you know about that?
I don't know specifically, but it would be an interesting ploy to be able to do that. So there's definitely no question that they scroll through social media in general to try and find people that they think they might be able to target. I mean, it could even be as randomly as just ringing phone numbers until you engage with someone who's, you know, hasn't had a phone call for 2 weeks or something, and they're quite happy to have a bit of a chat to someone, and one thing leads to another. So, but definitely social media can be a good source of information, although a lot of people now are basically blocking or closing their, setting their pages to private. So yep, from a private investigator's point of view, social media is not as good as a source as what maybe it had been in the past. So
is it, for yourself, you can't get access.
No, exactly. From a research perspective, it's getting a little bit harder, but never mind.
Peter, you often throw questions at me, so I'm going to throw a question at you this time.
Right.
Why do you think that the women get scammed less but they pay more? Any idea?
I think probably if they've fallen initially for the scam, then it's probably harder for them to pull out, I would have thought, perhaps. And and maybe once they're sort of sucked in, if you, for the want of better terminology, then they probably just they continue on further than what a man would. I don't know. That's only my guess.
Yep.
Or perhaps if they are widowed, perhaps they've got more money available. So,
That's a point, actually. Yeah, never thought of that.
So then we move on to investment scams, because you're asking you about the demographic for them.
Yep.
Again, not dissimilar, but investment scams generally seem to go between 35 and 64 years of age. Again, adults over 65 usually experience the highest financial losses, and that's sort of statistics produced by the Australian Federal Police, amongst other people. But again, similar to the romance scam, people under 50 are now the fastest growing demographic of victims. And then to give a little bit of a breakdown as to vulnerability, so young adults classed as aged 18 to 39, increasingly targeted through social media, which we just spoke about, fake trading applications and cryptocurrency schemes. So young professionals are often lured by the promise of quick wealth to combat cost of living pressures. So basically the get-rich-quick scheme, I guess, in a way.
While houses seem unattainable to some of them, maybe that sort of plays into the scammer, doesn't it?
That's right, and perhaps at that age too, you're sort of trying to think long-term in some ways, that maybe it's worth a try, and if you have to wait, 10 or 20 years, well, so be it, sort of thing. So middle-aged, Alan, ages 40 to 64, we won't comment whether we fall into that or not.
No.
So this group accounts for the highest volume of reported scam watch losses. They are often targeted with fraudulent pension investments, pyramid schemes or Ponzi schemes, and fake wealth management advice. So, if the return is too good to be true, it's probably going to be a scam.
Yeah.
And then 65 plus, which are classed as older adults for the purposes of this argument, while seniors fall victim less frequently than younger demographics, they suffer the greatest overall financial harm, frequently losing their entire life savings or retirement funds.
Yeah.
To long-term, and I've never heard this before, they refer to something as pig butching, which I'm not sure what that means.
Pig butching?
Pig butching, which, and then in brackets, romance, or impersonation in investment scams. So what they're saying is, to get an understanding of who is targeted and how you can spot red flags, and for latest data for that matter, refer to Scamwatch. SCAM Watch.
Yeah.
And that's a source of sort of more updates and red flags.
Yeah.
And the third one that you wanted me to look into were payment scams, which is... I think I've got something on that coming up in a little while. So payment scams, victims span all ages. Highest volume of reports typically come from adults 35 to 44.
Mm-hmm.
While those 65 and older experience the highest financial losses. So there's a bit of a trend there as to who experiences the highest losses. Mm. Scammers, of course, tailor their approaches to different age groups. So age 18 to 34 most frequently fall victim to online shopping, extortion or sextortion, as they call it, and rental scams, primarily on social media. 35 to 44-year-olds has the highest volume of reported scam incidents and monetary losses across general scam types. 45 to 64, often targeted by high-yield investment fraud and dating romance scams. Mm-hmm. And 65-plus again, while reporting fewer incidents overall, older adults are the largest demographic affected by investment scams and phone/remote access fraud, frequently losing their life savings. So,
because often these scammers ring up and want to, say your computer's broken and all this sort of stuff, and let me have access and I'll fix it. And that's where some fall. The older ones aren't sure what to do, aren't they?
Yeah, or they're from the Australian Federal Police or something, and that sort of thing. So, which we talked about a little while ago.
Yep.
So then a change of pace. You also, for homework, asked me to find out what's happening with facial recognition technology.
Yes, yeah.
Which is widely used across Australia, but its deployment remains heavily scrutinised, highly debated, and subject to strict privacy regulations. So in far as what sectors it's employed in, government and digital ID. So facial recognition is integrated into state and federal digital ID systems to securely verify your identity when accessing government services online. It's also standard at airport e-passport gates and used by law enforcement agencies. So obviously the government seems to be able to use it.
But then now, some of the bigger retail outlets ran into trouble, didn't they?
Yes, and that's what you asked me to look into initially. So retail and security. So major retailers like Bunnings and Kmart have previously utilised the technology for loss prevention to identify repeat shoplifters or violent offenders. They have faced regulatory pushback for overreach. So unofficially, it appears Bunnings are not presently using the technology and Kmart is unlikely to resume using the technology.
Peter, I've got to take a quick break and we'll come back. But with what you're saying, though, like the retailers are a bit worried about using it, yet the government will use it at every turn of the corner.
That's right, exactly.
All right, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. And that was Kylie Minogue and somebody's looking for me. I've lost the plot. Well, I'm talking to Peter from Absolute Facts. Sorry about that. Somebody just sent me a message that popped up on the watch. So anyway, I can't do anything about it at the moment. Sorry, Peter. Let's get back. We were talking about the scams.
Well, we're talking about facial recognition technology. Yeah. So just to finish off on that section, casinos and gaming venues, particularly in South Australia, are legally required to utilise facial recognition technology to identify barred patrons and enforce responsible gambling. Yep. And public venues was the other sector. The technology has also been employed in various capacities at large sports stadiums and public spaces. And for example, my understanding is the technology at the MCG is actually pretty good. They can really zoom in onto an individual. So to summarise that was, it's basically saying, while the Australian public largely supports using facial recognition technology to protect retail workers in particular from violent offenders, there are significant concerns regarding mass surveillance and data privacy. So I thought that that line probably summed it up quite reasonably.
Peter, from a private investigator's point, I'm asking you this now. Does a shop have to tell you if they're going to use it? I mean, could we be walking into, I don't want to start using names of businesses now because that's all fraught with danger. Could they be using it and not tell us, or do they have to put up a sign to say that it's actually being used?
Yes, I think that was the issue that that perhaps someone like Bunnings stumbled over was the actual notification, and apparently they did have signs up at the placement and things like the size of the font and where they're actually placed. Probably, I think the, as I understand it, the Privacy Commissioner basically said that was inadequate. So I'm guessing, like most people, and I mean, if you walk around shops like I do, you do see on the door quite a lot that you're under surveillance, or they have a sort of a placard or a decal or whatever the right word is that pretty much suggests that you're being watched by on camera. Which, as we've said on off air to each other, Alan, doesn't really particularly faze us too much.
I couldn't care less. Peter, when you walk in, now you've done a bit of work in these plazas or whatever you like to call them. Do they employ it when you walk in the door? I don't know.
They can do, yes. There's generally, I think realistically, and I'm not saying that this is the case, but pretty much anywhere other than toilets and bathrooms, you can virtually put a camera up anywhere. But, yeah, it would make sense to clock people on the way in and out of the main entrances or the entrances. Mm. And also, you know, the barrel as you walk down a common area, sort of the main drag within the plaza, I would imagine there could be cameras there.
Hmm. I just just wondering because, I mean, you don't. There's not normally signs up when you walk in them, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of them do have them.
I think if you look closely, there probably is a sign, even if it's just a decal with a camera saying you are being watched or something like
just
that.
Just a little thing parked near the corner somewhere.
Exactly. And I think this is where the Privacy Commissioner perhaps chimed in and said, "Well, I think the font might be a little bit tiny, and the wording needs to be a bit more clear, and also that needs to be more. There needs to be more signs around, more signage around, warning people. But nevertheless, so I, Alan, the next thing I came across was a little quirky little thing because over the years I have undertaken quite a few stolen motor vehicle investigations. Not so much recently, but back in the past, and I stumbled across an interesting thing which I think is quite recent, where a gentleman basically went to a service station and this is in Australia, went to a service station in the early morning, as he does just about every morning, stopped in front of the sliding doors to buy a drink, something that he does routinely pretty much every day. Mm. And while he was at the counter with his back to the car, another vehicle pulled up, a passenger got out and drove away in the man's car. Sure. So he left the car unlocked and the key in the ignition, which in normal circumstances you think would be a big no-no and the insurer is unlikely to pay.
Yep.
Now, the car eventually got recovered, and was damaged, contaminated with methamphetamine and all sorts of other stuff. And, of course, the insurer denied the claim on the determination that the car was left unattended, unlocked and with the keys inside.
Yep.
However, there was a case apparently in the UK which set some sort of a precedent, and the man took the insurance company to the Australian Financial Complaints Authority, arguing the car was not unattended as he was only 3 to 5 metres away. And what it came down to is the definition of what is unintended, unattended, I beg your pardon, and it's not defined in the policy. So basically on that, it was determined that the car was attended, in inverted commas, and that he basically had the ability to keep an eye on the insured object, being his car, and therefore having a reasonable prospect of preventing its theft. As he was only a few metres from the car, which was immediately parked outside the door of the shop, he was able to observe the vehicle. So basically he got his claim through, and apparently I think it's Auto in General, which is Budget Direct and a few other names, have accepted the process at this stage. That's the Australian Financial Complaints Authority process. But it's I thought that was a really quirky little...
it is, actually.
Little thing, yeah.
Because so it's all right to say that he was in control of it, but he wasn't. He still got knocked off.
Yeah, so it's and basically what you'll find is, I think the next time you get your policy renewal, if you have a look at the real fine print, I guarantee you'll find that a definition of unattended will be amended.
I've got to take a break in a minute, Peter, but I was talking to, I think I was interviewing a policeman a little while ago, and he reckoned something like 80% of cars, and I know yours wasn't, 80% of cars that are knocked off have the keys in them or left unlocked.
Yes, and back in the day when I was undertaking volume motor vehicle investigations, accounting for the keys was one of the things that you always did to make sure that the keys were accounted for, and of course, if they weren't, then that could cause issues with the with the claim.
Bad luck. I've got to take a quick break, Peter. We'll be back with more. John Farnham on Friday on Monday, and I played that because there's that huge big concert coming up later in the year. I don't believe there's any tickets left. I think somebody would tell me they were in the line and there was something like they were the 2,000th person or something, and not even sure they got them. But anyway, it's going to be a big thing. But some people have billed it as a fundraiser for John Farnham. I don't believe that's true. I believe it's for the actual cancer, which is throat and mouth cancer, whatever it is. Well, I believe that is, but I hope they raise plenty of money. Now, Peter, I got to say, you've got me worried. When you say to me, it's a guessing game for you, Alan, I start to get the shudders.
No, that's good, and you prompted me to bring it up earlier in the program just to make sure we got it in on time.
No, I didn't do it then. I thought, let's get it out of the way.
All righty. So, Alan, as of 2021, there were 6.7 million families in Australia.
Yeah.
So as of 2021, what percentage of families do you think would comprise of a couple with kids, not necessarily two kids, sorry, just a couple in a family with children?
I'd say 65%.
Yep.
Did I get it right?
No.
You said, Alan. Yep, I thought I'd got it.
No, 44%.
Gee, is it?
Yeah. So then a couple family, in other words, a couple without kids, 39%.
Right.
A one-parent family, 16%. I thought that one might have been a little higher.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that.
And then 2% other type of family, which actually makes 101 all up again. So it's one of those quirky things. But that was 2021, and I won't be able to find the answer to it. But I wonder how much that might have changed in the last 5 years.
I would say the percentage with children will be going down.
Possibly, but
that's just my guess.
If you look at immigration and things like that, a lot of that's families coming in, isn't it? So
yeah, I still reckon it were going down.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I could be wrong. I normally am.
Yeah, your 65% was never mind. this is actually a carryover a little bit from last month. I had an article about a lady who lost $30,000 after becoming the victim of an organised cyber attack and was forced to shut down her beloved blanket business, apparently. So a small business owner was hacked in 2024. They got copies of her identification and were able to pass all validation checks. And by doing so, then they controlled her social media, email, and even her banking. Calling up her workplace and redirecting her paychecks to a different account. I just wonder how the workplace fell for that one, but never mind.
Yeah.
So she had to keep identifying herself at the bank because basically they were acting on her behalf. And as she says, it was as much about the financial cost, but also the emotional toll of having your ID used in, you know, all sorts of different things. Her Instagram account was basically hacked, and they put up different products and obviously different paying and forwarding addresses and things like that. And it took her more than a year to begin recovering. Damage was permanent for one of her businesses, which was forced to fold after her 10,000 strong social media followers lost trust in the brand. So presumably they were offering things for sale and never actually delivering. Or whatever. And she actually had a little bit of a tech background but wasn't prepared for the extent or the professionalism, I guess, of the cyber attack.
They're getting smarter and smarter, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So that was an interesting one, which I had. And another one that I had from last month that we didn't get to was and I actually seen a few examples of this, is businesses that sell and then deliver a product and then have a claim for damaged product. So basically your product got damaged in the mail.
Yeah.
And then people, of course, the supplier will ask for pictures and they're finding that the pictures can be AI generated and things like that.
Fair dinkum.
Yeah, so when they do get the pictures back for fake damaged goods, etc., things like, you know, perhaps broken candles, smashed jars, and people looking for a refund request. If they look, if the business owner actually looks very, very closely at the photos, they will possibly find some discrepancies in the actual, you know, the labelling or the type of jar or the size of the jar. There's been a few examples put up on social media, which I thought were quite good because it gives people a bit of an idea. And so one of the things the supplier can do is ask for video proof. So I'm not sure how what much difference that would make, but apparently if when asked for video proof, a lot of people back off and and don't sort of follow through. So, yeah, things to watch out for from a small business perspective is AI-generated damaged product photos, fake receipts and refund claims. So that's another one. And basically, watch out for people trying to apply pressure for a refund on the basis that otherwise they'll post a bad review. And, of course, people very much want to try and steer clear of bad reviews. So,
Peter, I'm going to have to take a quick break. There's somebody knocking on the door. I'm the only person here. So we'll take a quick break and then we'll be back with more with Peter.
I'm too sexy for my love. Too sexy for my love. Love's going to leave me. It hurts. And I am too sexy for Milan. Too sexy for Milan, New York and Japan. And I am too sexy for your party. Too sexy for your party. No way I'm disco dancing. I'm a model, you know what I mean. And I do my little turn on the catwalk. Yeah, on the catwalk. On the catwalk, yeah. I do my little turn on the catwalk. Sexy by far. And I'm too sexy for my hat. Too sexy for my hat. What you think about that? I'm a model, you know what I mean. And I do my little turn on the catwalk. Yeah, on the catwalk. On the catwalk. Yeah, I shake my little tush on the catwalk. Little turn on the catwalk. Yeah, on the catwalk. Yeah, on the catwalk. Yeah.
Peter, I don't think that song was about me. It was called I'm Too Sexy. I don't think
yes.
That's...
right said Fred.
Yeah. And coming up, the last one, which we'll play just before the 2 o'clock news, is Pink Floyd, Matilda Mother. Tell us just very briefly about that, please, Peter.
What was the name of it?
It's Matilda Mother.
Oh, Matilda Mother, yeah, that's old, yeah.
Is it?
I'll have to look that one up. I know the song, but I'll have to figure a bit more out about it, yeah.
All right, this is we'll go right through now, and we've got that about 8 minutes. Peter, before you go on to the next thing, can I ask you for the next segment, which will be June, blimey.
July.
We're in June now. Gee, I'm behind the times. Peter, could you... just have a look at, and this won't take you long, but explain to the people, you spoke about Ponzi schemes and pyramid schemes before. Could you just do a bit on that on our next get-together, please, mate?
Ponzian pyramids, like sort of the latest type of ones?
Oh, or? Yeah, what the latest ones are and what they actually are, how they
– Sure.
How what they do and how they get the people in. Anyway, it's over to you now, mate. What have you got else you want to talk about?
So I've got one here where Australians are being warned about about a rise in misleading and false artificial intelligence generated posts online. And one of the examples was posts that have indicated that major road rule changes were about to be introduced to drivers over 65.
Oh, I've read one of those, yep.
And another one was to do with changes in superannuation laws, changes in age pension, and basically all of it turned out to be a lot of misinformation. No new laws or changes are coming up for road users over 65.
Yep.
Pension was last adjusted on the 20th of March. And the over 65 road rule change that was falsely publicised was claiming drivers over 60s had been over 60. I beg your pardon, had been hit with night driving restrictions.
Yeah, I read that, and I wondered
banning them from driving from 10 p.m. until 5 a.m.
Peter, what do they gain by doing that? I don't understand. Like, they didn't charge anything for it. What do they gain? I don't understand that.
No, I'm not sure either. But obviously transport authorities quickly refuted that was being flagged. And I'm not sure, as you say, what they might have to look into that, what they are actually gaining by doing that. But this is part of all AI-generated misinformation that is part of Aussies losing more than $2 billion to scams last year, which we sort of touched on.
$2 billion?
And the ACCC are pointing out that AI is a key driver for the rise in online scams in particular, and they're becoming, as we all know, increasingly sophisticated. They're using tactics such as phishing, replicating bank protocols, trying to trick scammers into giving money. And one of the examples that they gave here was that they even went to the extent of mimicking the bank's on hold music so that you felt comfortable that you were actually dealing with a bank. Yeah.
Gee, they're getting keen, aren't they?
Yeah. And then obviously that then leads to extreme pressure and, to act now, and you must pay this, certain amount of money now, or your parcel won't arrive, or your Microsoft account will be suspended, or your telephone will be cut off, and all
or
that
your,
sort of
or
thing.
Your address is wrong. We've got a parcel for you, and
yes,
your address
exactly,
is wrong.
Yes.
Can you confirm?
Amazon delivery on its way. Yeah. And another one that sort of similar ilk in a way, but I've actually get very annoyed at this one as well. Is when you're shopping online and you see something that looks like it's a relatively good price. And then all of a sudden you start getting messages coming through saying, 15 buyers interested in the same thing.
Yeah, yep.
Hurry, there's only two left. Oh, there's only one left now. Press now. Hurry up and make your purchase. And then, of course, at checkout, then all of a sudden you get hit with extra postage and handling fees or other charges, including credit charges, I guess, that pop up as well, and all of a sudden you're not actually paying what you thought you were going to pay. It's going to be a whole lot more, but you're sort of locked in, so you've got to follow through anyway, kind of thing. So, yeah, that was
Peter,
that was another one.
You've just hit something that I was just wondering. Is there any, and I don't expect you to spend a lot of time, but is there anything that says how many, we talk about scams, but how often the stuff doesn't exist where people put stuff up on Facebook, people send money. I know one guy who spent $15,000 for a car and the car never ever came and he lost his $15,000. Do they categorise that or do they just categorise that as scams?
I assume that would just be categorised as a scam. And, of course, the other one and the Victoria Police and that are publicising what they call safe exchange places where people, if you're meeting a Facebook seller or a Gumtree seller or whatever, do it in a... firstly, a public place, but also they have these safe exchange places where obviously there'd be a CCTV camera. And of course, I've heard of examples where someone will express an interest in a product, you know, something like an iPhone or maybe a pair of shoes or something. And then when they basically ask to look at the product and they get it in their hands, they literally just run off.
They just run off. I've heard that with mobile phones.
Yeah, iPads and iPhones and things like that. So, and the other one to finish off that particular section was talking about subscription traps, and there's now a very seems to be a bit more awareness and a push for people to become aware of what things they're actually subscribed to, and you know, relatively cheap, and you think, oh, it's only $3.99 a month or something, and then it goes up to $9.99 a month, and all of a sudden you're paying a lot of money for a subscription that you may or may not actually utilize, and people just sort of leave them rolling on. And I mean, I'm a little bit guilty of that myself, and sometimes you've got to, you know, cull a few things because you're just not getting in the value for money, or there's perhaps a cheaper alternative or things like that. So
Peter, in the old days, people used to print out, particularly for business, one or two copies and then take it out and say, look, you know, you've committed to this for the next 12 months, and they never ever printed. Does that still happen, or to business people, or are they a lot more sophisticated?
It's more about a discount if you go for 12 months rather than the – I think the dangerous one for me would be the monthly one that just keeps rolling over every month, and you kind of get a little bit blasé about it perhaps. Mm. Whereas when the – and of course, the other, and I do get annoyed about this, you get annual ones that just renew automatically.
Yes.
And you haven't had the opportunity to opt out, and they haven't necessarily warned you that the renewal's coming up. They'll basically process the renewal, then send you a receipt. And you go, well, actually, I probably wouldn't have renewed that if I had known it was become, you know, it was falling due. I'm not getting my value for money for my 12 months. So there's quite a bit of that happening as well.
Not good. Peter, unfortunately, I've got to go. I always find it fascinating to have you along. So we'll be talking to you next month, same time, same place. And if you could have a look at the or explain, I know you know what they are, the pyramid and Ponzi schemes, how it's put together and how people fall for it, that'd be terrific.
Yep, will do. Absolutely.
All right, mate. Well, I hope it's a good month for you, and a long weekend coming up. Are you going away?
No, doing a bit of chillax and catching up on a little bit of paperwork. And I was right about Matilda, Mother. It's right back at the Piper of the Gates of Dawn, which was one of the first two Pink Floyd albums.
Coming up right now. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Alan.